Hi, and welcome to Death in Cambodia, Life in America, a podcast where I interview my father, Robert Chow, one of the first survivors of the 1970s Cambodian genocide. He survived the killing fields, navigated through the jungles of Thailand, and escaped to America to build an empire in the donut industry. After about 40 years, I think it's about time he got a chance to share his story. I'm Dorothy, his daughter, and your host for today's episode. Let's dive in. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Death in Cambodia, Life in America. Today, we are again meeting with Robert here and getting off of our last episode. We left off where Robert recalled a really, really sad incident where he had to see his friend get killed, and he heard him screaming and echoing through the camp for his life. And we're back here at the camp. And Ba, welcome back.
Hey, everybody.
And so I want to dive in a little bit deeper about after you came back to this camp, you saw your friend get killed. What else happened in that camp?
Well, they continue kill. It depend on the day.
You said it happens probably every week. Last time I remember you said that.
Every week, sometimes every month. It really depend how they feel.
Right.
And if somebody talk to each other too much, this and that, and they didn't like it, they just pull you out and use the bamboo stick and kill you, and you know, knock behind your head and kill.
Yeah.
And then I bury a lot of the people in the camp.
Yeah, I remember an earlier episode. You actually had to be one of the ones bury the guy that was right next to you too. Is this, how many times have you had to do that? I mean, throughout this entire experience,
oh my God,
bury the guy next to you. And it's like, it happens so many times. You probably just keep feeling like, again, like, when is my turn? When is my turn? You know?
Well, I think you're numb. I mean, you know, when you do it too often, and then it just, sometimes you shaking. Sometimes you just think, it should be. I mean, you know, sometimes you feel like, you know, they're pretty lucky. They don't have to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that it's quite a bit. I mean, you know, they assign people. Sometimes they, okay, go ahead and dig the hole. Usually you dig the hole first, and then you know that they're gonna kill somebody tonight. When they pull out people to kill, they usually do it at nighttime. They pull and then they don't use the gun. They only use the bamboo stick and just hit in your head.
Do they have guns?
They do have gun, but they don't waste the bullet. No. They enjoy to just torture you.
That's even harder. A gun's probably better. You can just, you don't feel anything.
Yeah, don't feel it. No, they torture you. That's how they kill people. And I really just bury You see the people you bury, not probably 10, 20 the most, mm-hmm. but most of them, they assign you to dig the hole, two or three people. They tell you, dig the hole how big. If they tell you to dig a bigger hole, that means it's going to, they're going to kill more people.
More than one person.
Yeah. More than one person. And
how many holes did you have to dig? You said about 20, 10 or 20.
Yeah, 10 or 20. I mean, that's just, I pulled the body and buried it at 10 or 20.
But digging the hole.
But digging the hole, I mean, you know, it's almost every week.
Yeah.
The camp, probably around 3,000 people, 2,000 to 3,000 people. You don't know everyone in the camp because the reason why you cannot just walk free, even you go to work to talk to anyone you want to.
Right.
You just stay in your group, these 10 people, and have one, you know, guy that watching you. Each 10 people, they have one guy watching you, and 10 of the small little group, they have another guy watching this 10 group, and then the whole maybe 100 group, they have another people that watching you.
Right.
But after 10 group, the person that watching you maybe have no gun, but after that, the people that have gun.
Higher than him. Have guns.
Yes. So actually, I think you just live in a small group, and even the 10 people of your group, you cannot just talking to each other all the time.
How about at night? How about at night? You can kind of talk to each other. You sleep in the same area?
No. I think, you know, after dinner, after you eat, everybody try to find food, you know, after work. I mean, this is not like they have a schedule for you all. 9 to 5.
You have to stay here or you have to stay there.
No, there's no schedule. I think, you know, they just wake you up whenever they feel like, and then they let you get off from work whenever they feel like. You know, sometimes you get back 8, 9 o'clock at night. You just, you know, eat something, or you find something along the way that you walk back to the camp. You know, and then you just eat, you know, whatever you try to survive, and then you go to sleep. And you cannot talk. You cannot just talk, because, you know, at night it's very quiet. If you talk, they can hear you, and sometimes they sneak. Most of the temple place, the building, it's made out of just like a hut, but it's above ground. You know, it's above ground. You people can still walk under the,
under the hut.
Under the hut.
Yeah.
So soldiers sometimes, and they wear, you know, all black uniform. You cannot see them. And then they sneak around. They want to know who talking what, because they just watch you like a hawk. Because they're scared that somebody tried to plan something against the party.
Right.
So actually, you don't really talk to each other that much at all.
And then right before this episode, before we started recording just now, I think you touched on a great point that we haven't really discussed, is really how women are treated in these camps.
Well, I think, you know, they treat women or men just like animal.
So you were saying that women are and men are kind of treated the same?
Yeah, it's just like animal. I mean, you know, you cannot say much. And what they teaching you, telling you your life, it belongs to the party, the Communist Party. That's what they telling you. And that's what they, that's what they're doing.
Women always get taken advantage of. There's always instances of rape. And I'm sure, and if they're already kind of in that mindset of like, we own you, we control you, I'm sure you heard about that or seen about that really often within these camps.
Yeah, I think, you know, this camp or the whole country, I mean, what they do, any soldier that, especially men,
who, by the way, are still young, right? A lot of these soldiers are still kind of young.
Young or old.
Or young or old. Okay.
Yeah. Young or old. I think most are older, 60 years old, 50 years old, handicapped. They just request, you know, 20 years old. They do whatever they want. Just like I said, I remember, I think, you know, one day they cook a lot of rice and probably killed maybe two pigs. And I was party in the city. What was happening, they pick up about 10 girls from my camp, from our camp. And that's in the middle of working. All these girls work in the rice field. And then they have one car and pick them up. Oh, they were so scared. They thought, you know, they kill. But instead of that, so they took all these girls to the city and marry all of these handicapped people, 50 years old, 60 years old. And most of them, white skin, beautiful, young, 18 years old. 16 years old, doesn't matter. And you cannot say anything. I think, you know, I didn't see that, but one girl was refused. Mm-hmm. One girl was refused. Then she got killed. She got tortured. And the way they do things, they want you not refuse anything, whatever they decide for you. You cannot refuse. If you refuse, only two way, only one way. If you refuse, and then you die. You choose. So it's a lot of soldier. Even the girl, even the female soldier, they request the guy too, right? But not too many, but it happened. But most of them is the guy, you know, that take advantage.
Sorry, and this happens in all the camps.
You've
seen this from the very beginning.
Oh, in all the camps, yes. Yes. And, well, it happened to one of our family, mom's uncle, live in Long Beach now. Mm-hmm. His wife requests him.
Mm.
So he had to marry her. And just like what happened to me too, I mentioned earlier, I mean, that girl, but she's not a communist
she's not soldier. Yeah.
So, but it still happened. If she really, really, ask me to marry her, I cannot say anything. It's depend on her God, her, you know, if the God say, yes, you can marry him, and I'm done. I have to marry. If I'm refused, they kill me. It happened all over the country. So
that was really, really risky to say no to her.
It is risky. You know it. You say no, you die. And yeah, because I think, you know, killing people, that's the, oh, it just, it's normal for them. One life, kill, it's fine.
So how did you know, did you hear about it? Did these girls come back?
Yeah.
They came back married. And that's
they
how
not
you
came
knew.
Came back married. I think we hear from friends, from family sometimes, you know, because the news is not very open, but sometimes it's just when you go to work and then you
kind of hear what they're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, but you cannot talk much, like I said, you know, you just keep quiet. You know, yeah.
So these girls, they didn't come back?
No, they're going to live somewhere.
Live somewhere else.
Yeah, I have no idea. But we found out later after the communists, after Vietnamese take invasion Cambodia.
Later on.
That's how I find out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And even the girl that asking me to marry her, at the end, she married one of the local, not really a soldier, but this guy, kind of like a Khmer Rouge too, but it's not really what I'm trying to say. When Khmer Rouge came to the village, I think he had a lot of, tried to help the Khmer Rouge a lot, so they promote him. Live in a village. So she end up marry that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But did she like the guy? No.
Mm-hmm.
So after later on, when the Vietnamese invasion Cambodia, she just left the guy right away. So it was about 6 months or a year, 6 months or 8 months, you know, after she got married. So this is what happened, I think. You know, you just cannot decide anything on your own. They, the party, the communists, the soldier decide for you what to do, what to eat, what to live, what to marry. I mean, your life, it's belong to them 100%. If you decide not belong to them, you die.
So you're at this camp, and how long has it been now, really? I mean,
it's close to, I believe, 3.5 years.
Almost, I mean, 3.5 years now.
3.5 years to close to 4 years.
So at this point, how
I
old are you?
I came back. I was 15.
15.
15 and a half, close to 16.
Right.
So came back, and then now they change they always switch the God, the upper level God around.
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose. I believe they don't want you to stay in one place, you know, too long. So they are afraid you can, you know,
build connections, plan something out,
plan something to against the government,
right.
the party. So they pull. Now this time, I think they pull after 3.5 years. They switching around the whole country. So they take the soldier from up north of northern region back to southern region, and then they switch it. And each time they switch it, they have completely different idea. Some people kill more, some people are low to kill, mm-hmm. and some people just do whatever they want, that group, that new group. They target on the labor camp, because the labor camp, this kid, it belongs as a wealthy kid, educated people, and all of that. So they don't really care much this.
What you're saying is that the people who are working the labor camps are usually educated?
It's a educated. Their parents educated.
Their parents are educated, the ones that are working in the labor camps.
Yeah, because they want to get rid of the whole family. That's the whole idea.
Right.
They want to kill the whole family instead of that,
death,
and
yeah.
then they work you to death, you know, so they separate the kid. And then the parent, some of the parents already
been killed.
Been killed. So it was a tough life. I mean, you know, it's getting tougher and tougher. I mean, the camp, the kid is getting less because you no food, sick, and kill, combine all of these together. It's not going to last. It's not going to last long. So,
do you remember one of the hardest days in this labor camp?
Well, the hard day in this labor camp, I think after they switched the group, and then this new group, I think they more aggressive, more tortured, more
mean.
Yeah, I mean they kill you, but they still kill. I mean the last group it's killed too, but sometimes they feed you. But this one here, this new group, they don't care. They want to show the leader or somehow, somewhat. They very very aggressive.
They have no remorse when they kill.
No remorse. And so in our camp, I think one group of 10 or 12 tried to escape. One night, I think they gathered and took the boat. It was August, I believe, September, because the water it's the
high tide.
Mm-hmm. So they stole the boat, it's a little small boat, and tried to escape. So from our camp, that's a very far to Thailand border, to Thai border. You can probably It probably take 1 week, 2 weeks.
Because you're still in Mongkopuri.
Right.
If back then when you were working in the forest,
oh, that
you
one,
were very close.
Really close. Mm-hmm. That one, a couple hours, you'll
hit the border.
But it's hard to escape. It's very hard. They put a lot of soldiers along the border and mine, you know, the landmine.
Mm-hmm.
That's why up until now, the international community just try to go to Cambodian to put off that, you know, landmine, you know, to just
get rid of it.
Well, how are you going to get rid of it? It's really hard because you don't know where. It's all over the place.
So that night they tried to escape and you said that they stole a boat?
They stole the boat. They tried to escape and then they rowed that boat. It's about maybe 3 miles only. And then they get caught. They all get caught, but half of them got shot, got killed. And I think only three that still alive. Then they took them back. Now, so the next day, they pull everyone, all the kids in the camp, so to see how they tortured. And they explain, said, this is what happened if you tried to escape. The worst day, that day was so bad because why? I can see people die, but you know, sickness and they kill, but they used to chop the bamboo, chop your head, they just like two hit or three hit at you down. But this one here, they put on the stage, it's just like the table and then just tie you, you know, straight against that pole. And they use a knife. They use the knife. And this guy, it's probably around 13 years old, 12, 13 years old. The knife is just like a soldier, you know, knife and they just poke into the heart area. And the person's still alive. He opened his eye and poke it and slide it down and get the heart out. And bleeding. And then they oh my God, if you look at their face, they just enjoy it. They enjoy, they say, oh, I killed the enemy. They enjoy, you can look at their face, their enjoyment to just, and take, and you know, sometimes it's not like, it take 2 seconds to pull the heart out, because you know you have to cut the bone. You have to. It was horrible, and bleed all over the place. And then it took about 20 minutes, 30 minutes to get the heart, to real heart, and they cut the heart and put on the hand. And they enjoy it. They enjoy it. That was the hard part that you can face, because you see people got killed, but it's a different. This is just like I don't know. It's just horrible. It was horrible.
Straight from hell.
Yeah. And So they tell. They just tried to send a message. That's it. Don't try to escape. And
they did this for all the three. You said there was three.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They did all the And then you know, it took.
They took their hours, sweet time.
And then you just let you. If someone turned the head away. To kill that person too. I mean, you know, us.
Aren't there people screaming and crying at all? I don't know. Maybe you're just numb.
No. You cannot. You cannot. Then you get killed. Right there. Yeah, that night, I remember I couldn't sleep. It just when you close your eye, you see blood and pull the heart out from a real person, and that was a tough, horrible time. I mean, in that camp.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. That was also very, very hard to listen to. Very, very descriptive way of describing torture. I think, you know, those sorts of things you just have to live through. You wouldn't be able to just make a story up like that. And I remember just listening to Robert describing pulling out the heart slowly and holding it and watching the Khmer Rouge soldiers look excited and happy and as if they were killing the enemy. I could imagine that, as this episode is titled, just straight from hell. I mean, living through and watching something like that, not even being able to show emotion and cry during that time period. We also covered throughout this episode how women were treated throughout this time period. The light-skinned ones, quote-unquote pretty ones, were selected to be forcibly married to some of the soldiers, however old they are, whether they're handicapped or whatever it is. and having no choice and having no say in their life, having no say in anything. And I think considering today's current climate, when this is launched, it'll probably be about a month after instances in Afghanistan are happening. But I couldn't help but think about the women that are stuck in Afghanistan right now and how we can kind of see a little bit of the parallels that are going to be happening in between what had happened during the Khmer Rouge, how women were treated, and how they had no decisions for themselves, forcibly being married to people, regardless of whether or not they wanted to. Women topics are always a really, really sensitive topic for me because I myself am a woman. And it's just so, so hard for me to listen to some of these stories about how they just don't have a choice. I mean, it makes me feel so lucky. It makes me feel very grateful, very blessed for what I have. Other parts of the world, they don't have this kind of freedom that we do. So I wanted to just take a moment to say, if you guys have some time at all, there's a great organization called Woman for Woman. You can find them at womanforwoman.org. And this is not a sponsorship or whatever it is. This is honestly just one organization that I've donated to. And they have many, many different causes that help women in need around the world. Especially right now, they have a huge landing page for women in Afghanistan and an emergency fund. And I just wanted to throw it out there. Even today, even 50 years after the Khmer Rouge, there are still other countries out there that are dealing with some sort of terrible fall of their own government. So any way that we can help, any way that I can help personally, I would do. And I'm just sharing that with you guys. As I said, www.womanforwoman.org. I encourage you guys to just help anybody that is in need. Our life is a gift. And we should use it the best we can.